Well, what do you think it would be like if you were invited to come to a small group gathering, and when you got to this small group gathering, there was going to be this very, very wise and loving and funny and heartwarming person who is going to share with you like the most important things on their heart and on their mind as they were nearing their death. See, that's the experience that was recorded in 1997 in the book Tuesdays with Maury. Have you heard of this book? Have you read it? So after it was produced and published, 2 years later they made it into a movie, and then 1 year after that, it hit the New York Times nonfiction bestseller list. And people were just kind of captured by this whole idea as you got to come and listen to what Maury would say. So I kind of got on the bandwagon a little bit late. I was reading this book a few years ago, and I had this very bizarre kind of transcendent experience with this book. I'd be carrying it into the Starbucks, and I'd be doing some morning reading and some Bible study, and I'd set it down, and the barista would say to me, "Oh, that's a great book." And I'd be like, "Oh, this one?" They're like, "Yeah." And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm reading it. It's really enjoyable." And so, and I'd go and sit down, and I'm reading through it. And somebody in the coffee shop would say, "Oh, I've heard about that book. They said I should read it. Is it really good?" And I'm like, "Well, yes, it is. That's very good." Yeah. So, and then I'd be at like the park. I'm watching my kids, and they're playing, and I'm reading through the book. Somebody would come up, like, "Oh, I see you're reading Tuesdays with Maury." And I'm like, "What is happening? Like, what is going on? I have never had an experience like that with this, with any book." And you know, I really liked the book. I mean, Maury is a very heartwarming guy. And you get to hear, like, from this very wise sage. You know, he was a sociologist, and he was retired. He had a terminal illness, and he was nearing his death. And so you get to sort of eavesdrop on this conversation. But, you know, look, there's a lot of books written by very, very wise sociologists. What made this book particularly important and insightful is the timing of his coming death. Because look, this wasn't like a casual conversation that Maury was having. He wasn't flippantly using his words. Everything he said was very important. The importance was even heightened because his death was coming. He knew it. So he wanted to savor every moment he had as he invested his life into his friend. And as I was thinking about the king's speech in John 13 through 17, I thought about Maury because that's very, very similar to what's going on with Jesus and his disciples in the upper room. Jesus is going to be dying within 24 hours of him sitting there at this table. This is the last dinner, the last conversational environment he's going to have with all of his disciples. What he says to them has vital importance to us. He's not casually kind of shooting the breeze. He's not talking about current events and what's going to happen. Like, he's not saying, "Hey, look, next month, why don't we go and do this thing, go this way?" He's not talking about that. He is talking about vital principles. He's kind of summarizing and encompassing what he's been showing them and living with them over the last 3 years of ministry. And we have this opportunity as we sit and as we listen to hear from Jesus and to hear his amazingly wise and instructive words. I mean, imagine that we were sitting at this table with them. We're reclining on one arm and reaching and eating with the other. And a very strange thing has happened. There's no one there in this upper room to wash our feet. And so we're kind of looking around, like trying to figure out who's going to do that. Because it's certainly not going to be you and I. Because washing feet is for the lowest of servants. And well, when we didn't plan this get-together party anyway, so clearly, whoever planned it, well, they're going to take care of that. Certainly some servants are coming later, and they're going to wash our feet, right? Like, that's just the way it works. So as we recline there and we start munching on some bread, talking about the day and the weeks, it's been a very exciting week in Jerusalem, Jesus does something very uncommon and very unexpected, because he gets up and he gets the water and the towel and he starts to wash our feet. Like, what does this mean? Let's read through these verses, putting ourselves in that moment, And let's see what the Word of God has for us today. John chapter 13, starting with verse 1. It was just before the Passover festival. Jesus knew that the hour had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. The evening meal was in progress, and the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God, and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with a towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus replied, "You do not realize now what I am doing, but later you will understand." "No," said Peter, "you shall never wash my feet." Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no part with me." "Well then, Lord," Simon Peter replied, "not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well." Jesus said, "Those who have had a bath need only to wash their feet. Their whole body is clean, and you are clean, though not every one of you." See, an interesting thing is happening here in this verse, because so far we're talking about feet washing and a meal and water and towels. And in a very kind of a subtle way, Jesus does this all the time, he flips and he's talking now about something that has nothing to do with physical washing. In that verse, he says, "Those who have had a bath need only to wash their feet. Their whole body is clean, and you are clean." He's not talking then about physical clean. He's talking about, and he's actually foreshadowing, the cleansing that comes from the forgiveness of sin. The foot washing is a foreshadowing of service that's going to come when Jesus dies on the cross and then rises again. And he's telling Peter here, look, there's a cleansing going on here that's much, much bigger. Like, and if you don't have the foot washing, then you don't get the bigger cleansing, because they're interconnected and interwoven. If you can't accept with humility the foot washing, then you certainly would never accept with humility the forgiveness of sin. And he knows in that last phrase, he says, "though not every one of you," because Judas was present in their group. Verse 11, "For he knew who was going to betray him, and that was why he said, 'Not everyone was clean.' When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes, returned to his place, and he said to them, 'Do you understand what I have done for you? You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that's who I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly, I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them." Jesus should not be doing this. He breaks all the social norms, all the social rules, all of the expectations of what you would expect a great rabbi, a teacher, and a Lord to do. And you know, the disciples, consistent for the disciples, are confused. Like, if you read through the Gospels, the disciples are always confused. They're like, "Why is he doing that? Did you see him do that? What's he doing? Why? Somebody stop him. Please, he's embarrassing himself. Get him back over here." I mean, constantly the disciples are confused. And certainly in this case, they are as well. And afterward, Jesus talks about cleansing, and he talks about washing feet. He reminds them to be like him. And specifically in verse 15, Jesus tells them, "Do as I have done." So what's going to pop up here on the screen over the next handful of minutes is what I think is a very kind of basic and visual structure to this passage of Scripture. And the first piece of it is Jesus is telling them, "Do what I have done." Couldn't be simpler or more clear than that. I think of it kind of like almost like a maybe a master dance instructor who does some kind of a new move, turns to his students and says, "Do as I have done." Or a parent who goes into a child's room and has the child right there with them, cleans up the room and kind of tidies it up, puts things on the shelves and back where they're supposed to be, makes the bed, turns to their child and says, "Do as I have done." Because Jesus, as the master teacher, he knows that it's better to show people how to do something than to simply tell them how to do something, right? That's always the best way it works. He could have, think about this, he could have sat at the table and observed how no one was washing anyone's feet, and he could have simply pointed out their failure to see one another's needs. And he could have then told inspirational stories of how he had served people in the past and how they should serve people in the future. He could have explained to them how he wants them to do this, and then he could have broken them into partners and had them practice on one another. But that's not what he does. He's like, "Well, I'm just going to show them what to do. I'm not above that. I will take the lowest position and serve them." Have you ever had an authority show you how to do something instead of telling you how to do it or telling you just to go and do it? It makes an impression on you. I remember when I was 12 years old, my dad wanted to transfer lawn maintenance to me. So, and I tell you what, that's a tough job because growing up in Texas, you know, 100 degree summers, that was brutal. So he said, "Sean, come on outside. Let me show you how to do this." So he got the mower and he starts walking down the lawn, right? Making very nice straight rows. He's not weaving all over. And I'm walking right next to him. He showed me how to keep it straight. He showed me how to slightly overlap the tire so that the grass would be cut smooth. He showed me how to kick the bag so that you could tell if it's nearing full. He showed me how to take it off, dump it out. He showed me how to flip the weed eater upside down and to walk really steady along the way so that you could cut a really smooth edge along the sidewalk and the curb. He showed me that. And when I would mess it up, he'd come back outside and he'd show me again. And to this day, I remember and I know how to mow a lawn. See, Jesus knows the power of showing. That's why he does it. He knows that they will never forget doing this. And then he says, "Do as I have done." Now, some understand this to mean that they should make like foot washing into an ordinance, kind of like what we would do as baptism or the Lord's Supper, and they would do it regularly as a church practice. And that's not what, like the elders or myself, that's not what we even would understand this passage to mean specifically. It's fine to wash people's feet. I've done that in different kind of settings. And it is a show of humility and a show of serving another person. But really what's happening here is something that's much broader. It's much bigger than a simple act of washing feet. It's showing the greater lesson that we are to serve other people. So that's going to come up there. So Jesus says, "Do as I have done." And what he means when he says, "Do as I have done," he means serve others. And the second thing that he's pointing out in this passage is love others. Serve others and love others. Do as I have done. So in verses, we're going to talk about serving others first, and then we'll get to the loving others. So in verses 4 through 10, Jesus describes this whole foot washing. He's practically meeting their needs. And that's what service does. Serving others meets a practical need. Now, interestingly, serving is not doing something you were planning to do anyway, and you accidentally serve someone along the way, and they tell you, "Oh, thank you so much for serving me and helping me." And you're thinking, "Oh, well, I was going to do that anyway." Like, that doesn't really qualify. Serving is intentionally choosing to put the needs of someone else before your own. Fundamentally, that's what Jesus does here. And what's really insightful here, packed in the midst of these verses, is the quality of what Jesus laid aside to serve them. And so a couple of things to note. The first thing is what Jesus knew. It tells us in this passage, it repeats the word knew many, many times. Jesus knew everything. And he laid aside the power and the prestige that comes with great knowledge. So in verse 1, it says Jesus knew it was time for him to die. Jesus knew the future. In verse 3, it tells us that Jesus knew he had power over everything. In verse 3, it says Jesus also knew that he had come from God and that he's also returning to God. In verse 11, it says Jesus knew that Judas was going to betray him. And in verses 8 through 10, it talks about Jesus. Think about now Peter. He's got this big conversation going on with Peter about Peter saying, well, don't wash me. You're too great to wash me. And then Jesus says, if you don't, then you're not with me. And Peter says, well, then wash all of me. And Jesus, this whole conversation is going on. Jesus knew that Peter was going to betray him 3 times in the next 12 hours. And usually the person, think about this, usually the person who knows the most who's in a room is in charge. Because they know everything. And if you know everything, then you can kind of delegate, tell everybody what's going on. And if somebody tries to say, well, that's not a good idea, then you can say, well, actually, let me correct you, because you know everything. Jesus knows everything. And yet, he lays aside the natural prestige and honor and notoriety that comes with knowledge. And he says, I am going to serve you guys. But knowledge wasn't the only thing that Jesus laid aside when he did this. He also laid aside the chance to misuse ultimate power. In verse 3, it tells us that God had put all things under his power. All things are under his power. Think about that. Like, Jesus could have done anything. Look, there's no doubt the person with the most power in a room, they are in charge. They are the boss. And if you try to defy or if you try to push against the person who has the most power, like, what's going to happen then? You'll either get a kind reprimand, maybe a meeting later to follow up, maybe a harsh reprimand right in that moment. Jesus had all the power in the world. The feet need to get washed. Jesus could have, kind of through some sense of like telepathy, had some people come up into the upper room and wash their feet for them. He could do that. He's all powerful. He could have called angels from heaven to come down and wash their feet. But in humility, he chose to serve them instead. He laid aside all knowledge that he had, and he laid aside all the power that he had. And he said, I am going to serve you. I think the thing that trips us up so much about serving is that, well, we kind of feel above it. We feel like we're beyond it. We feel like, oh, well, somebody else can do that. And Jesus shows us here by being willing to lay down everything that coming alongside and laying that stuff down is intentionally meeting the needs of someone else. And he says, do as I have done. You know, Julia was mentioning earlier that our Millbrae campus has a big need right now. The setup and the teardown up at that campus is wearing them out. And you know how you think you're about to cross the finish line? And you're giving it all you've got, and then somebody says, oh, wait, no, the finish line's actually up there. Have you ever had a trainer do that with you or like in a road race? That's the cruelest thing. Man, you're giving it all you got. Like, I'm about to die. You're like, oh, no, you got to keep going. You know, like that's psychologically what's going on with the Millbrae campus. They thought their finish line was there, man. They were ready to move over into Crestmore. And so if you could just give like one Sunday morning to go and help them set up in the morning, or one Sunday after the services from here and go on up there and help them tear down, what would that do to lift their spirits and to give them a little bit of love? And you can certainly call the office, and also in your bulletin in the center section, there's an email address for Sandy McGreevy, and you can email her, and she will like slot you into a place sometime this summer. And what a great way for us as a church to pull together and to lay aside our own privileges and niceties and pure setup that already happens for us each week, and to say, you know what, we're going to come beside you guys, Millbrae. We're going to lift you guys up and help you. Now, and I've been thinking about this service thing a lot, I've put together a top five list for you. Top five phrases to show that you might have room to grow in serving other people. Okay? So these are phrases that a person might use if they could use some room to grow in serving others. So if you feel convicted by any of these, just know that you're in good company. I've said these myself, or I've heard other people say these, and there's no, like, I'm not trying to put guilt on you. I'm just trying to help kind of just reveal maybe where we are. So the number five, if you say, well, we just leave it here and someone picks it up, you could need some room to grow in serving other people. All right, number four, I don't do poopy diapers. You could need some room to grow in serving other people. How about number three? If you say, that's not the way I do it, so I'm not available to help. You could. Now, you'd never say that out loud, but I see that one happening all the time. That's not the way. Nobody should do it that way. Oh, I guess we're busy. You guys ready to go? Let's go get some lunch. All right, number two, that is someone else's job. I hear this one around my house all the time. Why are you laughing? Who do you think says that all the time in my house? You think that's me? That's not me. It's one of my kids. And we'll say, hey, why don't you go pick up this other thing? They're like, that's not my job. And we're like, whose job is it? And they're like, mom's. Well, that just shows that you've got some room to grow in serving other people. All right, now number one. Look, this one's going to be a little bit convicting, so I just apologize, but the number one phrase that could show that you have some room to grow in serving others is this. I used to do that before I made a lot of money. And now it's somebody else's job. I'm going to pay somebody else to do that. And when they don't show up, I'm going to get mad about it because I don't do that anymore. I've moved beyond it because I'm not a servant. And when Jesus calls us to serve others, he levels the playing field because he says, no servant, that's us, no servant is greater than his master. That's him. We're not greater than his. He knows intuitively that we're going to have like a resistance to this idea of serving. And he says, look, let me just like defeat that argument to start with, because you are not greater than me, and I have just served you. We're all in this together. And if we follow him, we serve other people. We think about them. We look for ways to meet their practical needs. We lay aside our opinions and our roles, our prestige, our power, and our knowledge. And when he says, do as I have done, the first thing he's talking about is serving others. And then the second thing he's expecting us to do is to love others, right? You remember that chart. So the first one is serving, and now he's also talking about loving them. This is revealed in verse 1, because he said, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. And in another translation, it says, having loved his dear companions. I mean, these were his dear companions, his close friends, his traveling buddies, the ones he'd sit around with at night around the campfire and talk about the day and laugh about funny things and share about troubling and hard things. And he continued to love them right till the end. I mean, now this shouldn't be a real big surprise. Jesus' whole ministry was all about loving other people, right? He's always showing love. He's always talking about love. He says, when he was asked, what's the greatest commandment? He said, well, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. This is nothing really all that new. But what's interesting here is to think about the range of his love related to washing their feet. Because there were two people in the upper room that we probably would not have washed their feet if we were Jesus. That's Judas and Peter. Jesus knew that Judas was going to had already conspired with the authorities and had already gotten his money and was going to betray him. And Judas is sitting in that room, lounging at that table. Jesus comes up to him and he serves him by washing his feet. And then he has that big conversation with Peter, and Peter's so boisterous and like proud and excited. And Jesus knows that Peter is going to betray him and turn against him three times in the next 12 hours. And Jesus, like, imagine, he's sitting there, he's got Peter's hand, he's got his feet in his hands, he's washing them, and he's thinking about how much he loves Peter. But he's also thinking about how he knows that Peter is going to turn against him. See, it's natural for us to serve people and to love people who are nice. You know, they treat us well. They're very appreciative when we serve them. They say thank you a lot. They're very gracious and kind. It's hard. It's unnatural to love people who are unlovable. But that's what Jesus does for us. Serves and loves. So 2 years ago, I was getting in shape, and so I was doing some new workouts, watching what I was eating, and I started drinking a lot of water, right? They say you're supposed to be drinking 2 liters of water a day. That's 8 cups of 8 ounces. Man, I'm gagging on this water. I can't drink that much water. Like, that's so much water. I'm, like, good for 1 cup. I'm like, oh, man, give me something else. So a friend of mine turned me on to these little powdered packets of Propel. And I, you know, rip that thing open, put it in the water, and all of a sudden, man, that water tastes so good. I could drink water all day long. And that's what I'm doing, man. I'm feeling really good about myself, too, because I'm drinking tons of water, eating great food, and working out like crazy, man. I'm feeling great. I'm healthy, and I'm so excited about it. And my wife, Cassie, she is a bit of a water snob, and she believes that water ought to be drank in its pure form. Nothing added, nothing mixed in. And so when she found out that I was mixing in Propel to my water so that I could drink more water in a day, she was not excited about that at all. As a matter of fact, if I remember correctly, I got a little mini lecture about how water is supposed to be drank pure. And I said, look, I can't drink water pure. And she's like, well, you just got to get over it and just drink it anyway. And I'm like, but I don't want to get over it. Like, it tastes good like this. Propel is, I like it, right? So so we talked about it, and we just decided to disagree. I'd do Propel, she'd do regular water, and every time I'd slip a little bit in and give it to the kids, I'd get reprimanded. So, you know, that was always a little fun game I'd play. She's like, is that water or Propel? And I was like, I don't know. So so I thought we kind of had come to a pretty peaceful agreement to coexist on this thing. When, and then I realized, no, we had not, because I'd go to the pantry and Cassie had gone to the grocery store, but there was no Propel in the pantry. And I'm like, hey, Cassie, I noticed there's no Propel. Like, she's like, yeah, I'm not buying that. And I'm like, you saying I got to go to the grocery store on my own? Like, to just make one? Yeah, you got to go get it yourself. I'm not buying that stuff. I'm like, man, this is like a fight now, not buying my Propel. So I'm making, so I get on my little scooter and I drive down to the grocery store just to buy Propel packets. I'm like, this is ridiculous. So, a few weeks later, I'm taking the kids down to the beach. It's a really hot summer day, and Cassie packed up some snacks and drinks for everybody. And we're down at the water. We've been playing. We dug this big sand hole. Kids are thirsty and hungry and everything. And so we go over to the little bag that Cassie had prepared. We're pulling out our little snacks, and I'm passing out to the kids, and they had little water bottle things that they had. And I saw in there a water, like a regular water bottle, right? Just like the clear kind. And I'm looking at that, and here's what I'm thinking. Cassie packed up this snack bag. I see, that's a regular water bottle. She had all the power to put anything she... She just gave me plain old water. I know it. Oh, I'm going to... So I open up that bottle, put that thing to my lips, and it's got that sweet taste of Propel. I'm like, oh, man, Cassie, she gave me the Propel water. And what's interesting about that is that she did not change her opinion about water. But she decided that she loved me more than she loved her opinion. And in that, she was going to serve me and meet my need. And isn't that what Jesus does for us as well? He sees us and he says, look, I love you so much that I'm going to meet your practical needs and I am going to serve you. And then he tells us, he says, look, do as I have done. Serve others and love others. But see, the heart of what's going on here is actually bigger and broader than this. This is what the passage lays out. This is simple, but let me give you something. Like, let me just drop an idea on you that is like the whole point of this sermon today. Like, an idea that I have been wrestling and thinking about, like something that's kind of haunted my mind through the whole week, and here it is. We serve who or what we love. That puts all of this into perspective. Jesus isn't saying, hey, go and just crank up a bunch of service and help a bunch of people. Because love and service are intertwined. You can't have them without each other and do what Jesus is saying to do. And so, we serve who or what we love. Like I said, Cassie chose that she loved me more than her opinion. But man, there are a lot of people who love their opinions. And because of that, they serve their opinions all day long. There are a lot of people that love themselves and they serve themselves all day long. And Jesus loved his disciples more than his perfect knowledge and all of his power and all of his rights. And he chose to serve them because he loved them. And then in a little while, in the story of what's going on here, Jesus did the ultimate when he died on the cross. Because he loved his disciples and he loved us so completely that he served us by dying on the cross. And then he rose again so that we might be free. But he did that because he loves us. Because love is seen in action when we serve other people. And so as we think about applying this to our lives, the ushers are going to come down and they're going to pass out some small pieces of towel. And I'd like for you to just take one of these and hold it. And then you can take this with you through the week. Put it someplace that you might remind you to be a servant to other people. To set aside your rights. To set aside your own desires and maybe your own opinions. And to seek to intentionally meet the needs of someone else. That's the idea of these little towels. Because see, I've been thinking a lot about, obviously, this whole idea. Like, whenever I'm going through this stuff, man, this is just like the thought that I think about all week long. And the service and the love are so intertwined. And, you know, if I were to ask you this question, how would you evaluate your level of serving and loving others? Think about your answer to that. How would you evaluate your level of serving and loving other people? See, some of you are going to evaluate yourself very, very, very low. You're going to say, oh, I'm so horrible. I don't really serve people as much as I ought to. I don't feel like I love people very well. I knew I need to grow in that. And then others of you would be on this total opposite extreme, and you'd say, well, yeah, you know, I guess I'm pretty good at serving people. I mean, you could list out a number of ways where you serve other people, and you feel like you're, in general, a pretty loving person. And I've just been wondering why the discrepancy. And here's why I think there's a discrepancy. Not so much because of how much we do and don't serve and love people. I think there's a discrepancy because each of us will measure ourselves based upon whom we compare ourselves. And if you're comparing yourself to somebody who's kind of struggling along, you feel like a champ. Like, man, I'm serving so much more than that person. I'm rocking it. I am servant of like the year. Look at, like, they don't hardly do anything, but like I am like doing all this stuff. Now, if you're comparing yourself to like a high caliber overachiever, man, you feel like a failure. Like, man, I'll never serve like that person. They're doing everything all the time. Like, when do they sleep? I need sleep. I don't think they sleep at all. Like, there's no way I could keep up with that person. So you feel like a failure. And we're not even going to compare ourselves to Jesus. I mean, you don't want to compare yourself to Jesus because you'll never measure up to him. But, you know, maybe Jesus isn't expecting us to frame this in a competition at all. Me versus you and you versus me. Maybe instead, Jesus is revealing this principle here to us that we serve what we love. And we should be asking the question, what do I love? Because that is seen in the way I serve. Jesus would say to each of us, I think, love me first, and then serve your neighbor. And you're serving them because you're loving them. And so maybe we don't have a serving problem. Maybe we have a love deficiency. Maybe we should ask the deeper question of, wow, like, what am I loving? Jesus says, love him first and love other people. Maybe I'm not doing that so well. Now, and I know if I came to your house and we were hanging around together and I watched what you do, I know I'd see a bunch of serving in your life. I came to your work, I just watched you over a weekend. I would see it. You would see it in me. You know, you would see me wash some dishes. You'd see me pick up stuff around my house. You'd see me engage the kids, wash them, read them stories. I might even make some lunches. On and on. I mean, there's a bunch of things I'm doing that are serving. But see, these are what I would call my predetermined acts of service. So I kind of fit those into a wedge. Okay, and all of us have these. All of us have like a wedge of predetermined service. And as long as you stay within that wedge, you're totally fine because you've already decided you're going to do that. See, the real revealer comes in this. How do I respond when a need is outside of my predetermined wedge of service? See, if I gladly respond with a servant's heart, then I'm showing that I love. I'm showing that I'm able, I'm free, I'm capable to expand and show, look, I'm okay with that. Let's roll. Or if we grumble and complain, get angry, we love something else. See, this last week, it was hot this week, wasn't it? I mean, hot. I don't know about your house, man. I'm sweating in the house. I'm like, get a fan. Like, I am dying here. And we had been out one day. It had been a long day. We had some family visiting. And it was one of the hot, hot days. And we were coming home, like, right before dinner. And I had kind of laid out in my mind what ought to happen the rest of the night. And here's what it was. Cereal for dinner. Maybe some sandwiches. Like, let's keep this simple. Like, I am hot. I am tired. And let's just, like, give the kids some ice cream and, like, put them to bed. All right? Let's just be done with the whole thing. We had, like, how many kids in my house? 5 little kids in my house this week. It was crazy. And so we get, and I wasn't part of the discussion about what was going to go on. So Cassie and her sister, they decided that they were going to cook dinner. And so the stove's on, heating up the kitchen. Ooh, so mad about that. Now, I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just going to hang with me for a second. And there's a bunch of dishes to do. It's dragging out. And I'm washing dishes, right? Like, if you would have seen me, you probably would have read my nonverbal attitude. But if you would have seen me, you might have thought, oh, look at Sean. He's such a servant. Man, I wasn't a servant. I was grumbling. I was mad. Because I loved my idea of what ought to happen that night more than I loved my family. Think about that. It was revealed in my grumbling and my complaining. And I was going through the motions of serving, but I wasn't doing what Jesus wanted me to do. So Cassie asked me, she's like, "What's wrong?" And I said, "I'm so mad right now. It's hot. I don't want to be doing this." I said, "I'm sorry." And, you know, this phrase came to my mind. We serve who or what we love. And I knew in an instant, I'm serving my own ideas right now. I'm serving my own opinion of what ought to happen. And I said, "I'm sorry," because that's not the man I want to be. I want to be the man who loves the Lord with all of my heart and shows that I love you and the kids and other people as well. And so holding on to that towel you got there, all right? That can be your reminder this week to put your love into action and serve people. And when you find yourself resisting, when you find yourself holding back, you're grumbling, you're angry, I know we all do it, then you can, maybe that towel can be a reminder and you can just ask yourself the question, all right, like, what am I loving right now? What am I loving right now? If you would, bow your heads and let's go to the Lord in prayer. Jesus, oh man, we are just so humbled and amazed by you. In fact, you'd lay it all down and you would just say, "Look, I'm free to love you guys in any way you need to be loved. I'm free to serve you in any way you need to be served. As a matter of fact, I'm going to come up with amazing ways you never even knew you needed to be served because I'm going to die on the cross for you. Thank you, Jesus, for being our Savior. Thank you for showing us the way. And we ask now that you would empower us to be your people this week, to serve and love others with glad hearts. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.